Bing, bong, boom. Welcome back. Recently, the last three podcasts, I've been talking about MoPy and its particular version of martial arts / meditations. Well, when I think about it, from the book itself, The Magus of Java, in essence, it's not really a martial art. It's more of a form of meditation. And I've been really thinking about it long and hard about its relationship to Bagua Zhang, which is a martial art. And there are a lot of things that puzzle me, or let's just say for a polite way, get me thinking, like how come Costa couldn't crack level 4, couldn't reach it? What was the struggle behind it? What was making things so difficult for him to reach it? And why was it so easy for his master to reach it and surpass it, other than being a natural prodigy? And at first I didn't have much to say about it, or no thoughts came about, or no answers or solutions. But then one day, I'm on my bed, sitting there meditating, a Sunday like today, and I thought, there has to be a solution to this. How to surpass level 4? Because his master basically talks about how you're filling up the Dan Tian with Qi, and you just keep filling it more and more. And as you fill it, each level is a doubling of the level before, but the doubling only starts on level 4. Well, the first thing I realized, and you guys who have read the book also realize, is that no, it's more a case of how do you measure Qi? How do you measure something so vague that you can grow and expand it? In previous podcasts, I had talked about it. There are certain rules of thumbs. There are ways of knowing. But it's a real fundamental thing or concept that has to be overcome in order to be able to get that growth going. People don't realize it, but before Newton, the idea of power or how much power something needs was very vague. They had a rough concept of how many horses does it take to pull a cart laden with coal, 1 horsepower, 2 horsepower, but no one actually ever decided to actually measure it. They just knew you needed at a certain weight a horse, and another certain weight, you need 2 horses, another certain weight, 3 horses. But no one had really thought about it systematically until Newton, who was incidentally also an alchemist. Yes, it may shock a lot of people, but a lot of scientists are secretly alchemists. They just don't want to admit it. So this is a real sticking point. So I have my vague rules of thumb and order how to measure it, but it really, at this point, no one's figured out how to actually measure it accurately. So there's a lot of contentiousness around it. But there was something in the Magus of Java, the book, that did leave the door open, and that was Costa was an engineer / scientist. So I thought, why not think like an engineer? And then the thought came to my head, I have an orange or an apple, something round like that, a round piece of fruit large enough. And then I thought, okay, let's just say this orange represented my Dantian is filled up with Qi, and I want to fill it up with double the amount. Logic says, While if it takes me 81 hours of focused meditation to achieve it, then it should take double the amount of time to reach double the amount of chi filled up. And so if you want three times the amount, it takes three times the amount of time. Four times the amount. Now, you can see a problem with that, in that if it took you, say, 16 years to fill it up one time, it will take you 32 years to fill it up double, and 48 years, three times, and then 64 years from the point you start to have four times full. So that can't be right, because if Chang, John Chang, had already reached level 48, 38, there would be something else there. So I thought, okay, let's go the other way. If it takes 81 hours, which equates to 16 years of reaching the first time, what if that first full amount of chi could actually help the person to achieve the next level? Wouldn't they reach the second level sooner or faster? Most likely, yes, because it's a difference between walking and running to a place. A person running to a place who has already learned how to walk will get there sooner than a person walking. So let's just assume that it will take half the time. And let's just assume we're not saying he can't run yet, but he's walking quickly or jogging. So half the time. So that means if the first filling up is 16 years, then the next level will take 8. So that would get to 24 years. Then the next level, by that reckoning, will take half the time again, because he's going even quicker. So 8 years is 4. 4 plus 24 is 28 years. Then you should be able to reach level 4 plus 2, because that's half of 4. So 28 is 30 years to reach the goal. Is that more reasonable? And yeah, it seems more reasonable. So even though the first level is 16 years, it will take a total of 30 years to get to level 4. Now, there is a slight issue with this, because while it's still hard 2 years, to get to level 5 will only take 1 year plus 30, which is 31. That means level 6 should be reached in half that time, which is 6 months. So 31 years and 6 months. Level 7, I think it is, will be half the time again. Level 8, half the time again. At some point, the numbers will keep halving to the point that it will take a total. He'll reach a point where realistically he'll get to. It'll take 32 years to reach the end. So at some point, those numbers collapse. Quite literally, he'll get to a point where level 30 to 72 is just like a blink. They don't exist, because it's just too fast. And that would mean that the value gained from those missing, those suddenly really fast gained levels would be pointless. Because there is no way to go out and experience what that achievement would have gained you. So in a human sense, in a way to actually learn from it, there is a number that I'm not going to crunch it. You can crunch it yourself. Just keep halving, where you'll go 6 months, then another 3 months, then another month and a half, then another, you know, quarter of a month, so forth, one day, and it'll come down to 1 day. So up to a point, that way of counting it would work. But then there is a point where it becomes meaningless. So is there any other way? At this point, I haven't figured it out. except to say that there has to be something else in it. And a lot of it has to do with, based on what John Chang shows Costa, is that it's not just reaching the level that's important, is also experiencing that level of what kind of energy it gives you. You know, it's not just about, I give you a simple example. You go to the bottle shop, you buy a bottle of vodka that's got enough alcohol in it, and then all the whole experience of buying it, opening it up, and then drinking it all in one sitting. That's what meditation's like. But it's not just that. It's also the effect the alcohol gives you. The good times, the hangover, the holler, all of that is included in the experience. When you're doing Baguazhang, it's the same thing. It's not just you go out and train and you practice. It's also the changes and the differences in your life that doing it has impacted you. There is a before and an after, a measurable difference. Now, when I say measurable, as you can see, it's not always about the numbers. Sometimes the measurable difference is the experience. Sometimes it is what you can see. That's why Baguazhang is such a powerful cultivation method, because it's the experience of doing it that helps you to grow, that fills up your dantian, but it's also the experience of what happens after you've stopped training for the day and you go out there in the real world and you live your life. The before and the after. And it is closely linked to the reason why you took up Baguazhang. Why are you doing it? What were you wanting to gain out of it? Costa repeats again and again his frustration about why he can't do all the things that John Chang could do. Well, the first reason, Costa, if you listen, is because you're a different person. And the second reason is your goals were different. And on a more mystical level, the third reason is that everyone's element is different. Everyone's path is slightly different. If one person on my left here learns Baguazhang and he can suddenly, I don't know, breathe fire out of his mouth after doing it for 20 years, that doesn't mean that the guy on my left on the other side will have the same skills out of it. Now, if the guy on my left is measuring himself from the guy on the right, he will feel like a loser, like he's failed. But it just so happens the guy on the left, what comes out of his mouth is water. Everybody's different. Everybody has a different path to follow. And we also have to maintain a certain sense of realism in that you have to look around you and go, where are you living? What is the most important thing in your environment? Who are you measuring yourself against? And is that person a realistic measurement of what you want to achieve? Now, when I say who are you measuring yourself against, let's just take, for example, you're measuring yourself against Bruce Lee. All of us in the West did it at some point. We want to be like Bruce Lee. We want to go, hi-ya, and do all the things he does. And then we discover very quickly we're not Bruce Lee. But when we, on the very basic level, let's just say Bruce Lee is the guy you're trying to measure yourself against. Are you measuring yourself against A, Bruce Lee the person, as in the actual person who lived in real life? Or are you measuring yourself against Bruce Lee, the character, the actor that we see on the big screen? The one that gets repeatedly reused in other mediums. There's a huge difference between the two. And I know for a lot of people who like to hero worship actors, they can't tell the difference between, say, Johnny Depp, the actor, and the characters he portrays in the movies. Even though the actor, Johnny Depp, spends a lot of time picking characters where he has to change his appearance and completely act differently from who he is in real life. And if you are measuring yourself against, let's go back to Bruce Lee, do you really want to be like him? Because in different cultures, he comes across totally different. In the West, he's this awesome guy who's lean and ripped, who screams like a monkey, jumps around. But that same person back in Hong Kong, he wasn't like that much at all. When people look at it, when you ask people about him over there, they frown. They're polite to Westerners, but they actually frown at what kind of person he was, because his personality was very unsavory in real life. But that's over there. And even if he was a nice guy, he did not portray a lot of the virtues that Chinese hold dear. He was basically, to them, loud and obnoxious. He did not have this thing, what they call quiet power. He was a fighter. He was in gangs. He was all the things that make Chinese afraid of martial artists. Yes, and if you're one of those people who's learning from a master or grandmaster from China who goes, oh, you know, we were persecuted against, just ask yourself, are they telling you the whole picture, the whole story of what happened way back when? I bet you they aren't. I bet you they're telling it to you from their perspective, which is an image of persecution. But to a lot of Chinese, if you tell them, I want to be a martial artist, I want to be a kung fu master, they get scared and they walk away. Because for them, a lot of the martial artists that they knew in their stories were actually the bandits, the gangsters, the people who were harming and abusing other people. So as a Baguazhang practitioner, you know, when I started this path, I told my wife I want to be a kung fu master, a martial artist. Yeah, she's Chinese. She was very concerned about the whole thing. And I said to her, you know, I've studied this thing called Bagua. And I said, they use a lot of palms. And I said, one of the reasons they use palms is so that, because fists are used for hurting people and palms is more of an act of defense. Whether I was accurate or correct at that time, it didn't matter. What matters, I walked down that path. And in the end, you know, she came on board when she realized that Bagua as an internal martial art like Tai Chi isn't about going out and starting fights. It isn't about proving to other people how great one is at fighting and winning battles all the time. Because those things can't be sustained. What it is about defending your turf. It's about defending your family. It's about defending your wife and your kids. It's about defending the principles of martial arts. It's about being a protector of that which you love and not doing it in a way that you necessarily hurt other people. It's about becoming the center of your own feng shui, your own geomancy, so that no harm can come to those around you. So that when people are in your, within your aura, within your spirit, they feel safe, they feel protected, they don't need to be harmed. Your presence alone is enough to deter harmful acts towards you and those you love. And so John Chang in the Magus of Java, he was on the side a healer. That, I guess, is what he set himself out to do. So I guess if you take out the numbers, there is a way to measure qi, and that is to measure your unspoken impact on the people around you, your environment, is to measure your feng shui, for a lack of a better word, around you. I guess if, you know, and I don't know, that's probably the best way at this point how to measure it. What kind of unworded impact you're having on those you love without needing to impose yourself on them. In other words, guys, all you Baguazhang practitioners and you Taoists, let your aura shine. Let yourself be the light and the candle in the darkness. You don't have to burn things down, but, you know, you can be the light for others so they can find their way.